This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, July 18th, 2012. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poetry's broken promise. One of the enduring myths of poetry is the genius who dies young, John Keats being Exhibit A for this sort of thing. There have been others, but not many when you come to think of it. But the story of the poet who burns all too brightly and dies at the peak of his or her powers is pretty irresistible, which is why Garrett Caples deserves credit for not casting the story of Alden Van Buskirk as a modern-day Keats. In a piece that's up on our website, poetryfoundation.org, Garrett Caples tells the story of a talented but obscure beat poet who died in 1961 when he was just 23 years old. Garrett Caples is a poet in Oakland who was also the poetry editor for City Lights Books. Garrett, until I read your piece, I hadn't heard of Alden Van Buskirk, known as Van to his friends. Now, you like Van's work, and I like how you didn't oversell him in your piece, but tell us why you think he's worth our attention now, some 50 years after his death.
Well, I mean, he's one of those poets who never really got a hard look so much as, you know, Auerhahn Press was a small press, and they published 1,000 copies of Alden's book called Lamy, and that's kind of it. A few people picked up on it here and there, but that's about it. And then he's always just kind of been a poet's poet in the sense that the book has had a bit of collectability because it has an introduction by Allen Ginsberg, and so that automatically, you know, gives it a certain type of collectability.
Can you do me a favor? Can you read that introduction by Allen Ginsberg? It's a very brief note, and it's kind of interesting. Can you read that for us?
Yeah. It's just called A Note on Lamy. This young poet who died, alas, in his earliest 20s, I never knew, but thought at once when reading his verse, ah, what a lovely companion he would have been to talk to on tops of roofs and bridges, or sitting with a bottle of wine or delicate martini in the middle of a living room floor at 3 a.m. His writing shows that despite his early youth, he felt truth. Perhaps it was a sense of his oncoming death that bore him to deliver a cry, this cry, to you. In the verse, all sorts of weird electronic references, images of robot paranoia, city impulses of supersonic nerve thrill are recorded which parallel the sensibility of at least one reader, and probably everybody. This whole witty, somber book, Lamy, consists of 91 pages and makes a complete statement of person. Allen Ginsberg, 7:30 p.m., 25 January, 1964.
I love how he talks about a delicate martini. It's so funny. So Alden Van Buskirk was born in Vermont, but then he went to Dartmouth College to be a skier. He had hopes of becoming an Olympic skier, I think. Then he got sick. What was the name of his blood disease?
Paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria.
And he didn't know it for several years that that's what it was, but later when he went to St. Louis to be a grad student, he was diagnosed with that disease. And then he took a trip to Mexico with a friend and ended up in your part of the world, in the Bay Area, specifically in Oakland.
Yeah, and basically it's like the last year or year and a half of his life is this period of travel and writing the majority of the poems that appear in the book. You know, so it's a very much like this very intense last, like, say, 18 months of his life are packed with these adventures and writing these poems.
Let's hear a little bit from the book. Can you set up for us and then read section 5 of Lamy?
Yeah. Lamy in Oakland is a poem of his life in the city. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to read section 5 just because it was one of the first things that really grabbed me with his work in terms of I had just moved to Oakland and it just kind of reminded me of being in downtown Oakland very, very strongly. Mm-hmm. Sirens in the night. The city is crying for her lost lovers. Broadway, Oakland, endless army stores, western swing bars, 40-cent movies, the backdrop for a parade. No, the orbit of sailors, apprenticed hipsters, and two-bit hustlers. One, angel face, soft curls and shades in a pawn shop doorway, lifts her knee gently into his belly, laughing noiselessly. Cool body circling in neon light. Pure light of the spirit, the senses livewire ends. Known in pot paranoia. Thousands of sailors on leave, still captive in their bodies. Few chicks are the sadistic swagger of male sexuality, shuddering naked in itchy blue uniforms. Sweat breaks out, the eyes narrow, glint, and the burning everywhere, a black fire under neon light of the fierce lamp. No compassion, sky blocked out by shouldering buildings and neon suns. Prowl of beasts in the night air, black sweat from mouth and asshole. Tortured necks in bus station, penny arcade, dirty movies. Black sweat through inspection shoes, rockets of spit cut by plastic jackets. Orbit burning over the mountain, the entire scene revolving in neon spins. A plate of carnival colors over the coast hills whirls a Saturn of rainbow stripes into eternity in the hands of William Blake, who guards the world tonight.
Here we have a scene of Oakland at night with sailors walking around and kind of the garishness of I guess, prostitution is implied. And I bet you Oakland has changed quite a bit since those days, no?
Things have changed. There are no Western swing bars on Broadway, you know, or Armory stores, and, you know, the movies are in this terrible, you know, multiplex in Jack London Square. But at the same time, this picture that he painted still holds up and still matches this town. Hipsters and hustlers, that's Oakland, you know.
Why does he talk about black fire and black sweat? Is that because it's night? What is this insistent adjective doing in there?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, but I feel like it might have something to do with his own body. The sort of street scenes of Lamy in Oakland weave in and out with his own account of himself and his disease, and there's a lot of blackness of the disease in terms of black sweat, black piss. The blood is breaking down wrong. He has a lot of problems this way, you know, and so a lot of the sort of like the black fluid sort of stuff, I think, is his own body boiling up in the middle of these scenes, if you see what I mean.
I hear a lot of Whitman in the poem because it's a scene of somebody moving through these very vivid scenes of urban life, but it ends in the hands of William Blake, who guards the world tonight. Now, Blake was a talisman of Allen Ginsberg, as was Whitman and Rambo.
Yeah, he's kind of like the first generation of reader in a way. You know, it's like he's reading things like Dr. Sachs and The Subterraneans like as they're coming out. I feel like Dr. Sachs in particular, Kerouac's book, was a big influence on him.
Mm-hmm.
That comes out a lot.
The allure of the Beats was powerful then, and it remains powerful. Why do you think the Beats and the aura that they project have lasted so long?
You know what I think it is ultimately? I'll be honest too. I started being a writer from reading Kerouac when I was 15. You know, that's what made me think I got to become a writer. You know,
right.
I mean, you know, and it's not like I'm a beat writer at all, but it was very inspiring to me. When I was young, and I think it's because it gives you a picture of being a writer that isn't boring, that makes being a writer seem like the greatest time on earth.
Garrett Caples, thanks so much.
No problem.
You can read Garrett Caples' essay on Alden Van Buskirk on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you can also read hundreds of other essays, thousands of poems, and watch videos and listen to podcasts. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.